Hello, this is the evening of the 17th of January, and a few hours ago I posted to you a very interesting MP3 file to do with the current situation with vaccines. Now, what I'm going to send to you now, I don't know how long it's going to be, it might be in two parts, but I really encourage you to listen to the whole thing if it comes to you in two parts. I'll know that when I've edited it, but I have a reading by the author John Hamer of his chapter from the forthcoming book, The Falsification of Science, which soon will be available in the stores and from Amazon and places like that. So what John has gone to great pains to explain, not only about medicines, but about many aspects of the scientific constructs that we've been led to believe and taught to believe from very early ages, many of them are fraudulent. I 100% believe that. John studied it to a great extent, one of the few people ever to do so, and get it published in the way that he has done. This particular reading is all about the germ theory, or as it is often commonly called, the terrain theory. And you really need to listen to this very carefully. Make your own mind up, as always, but nothing is what it appears to be on the surface. Here we go. John Hamer reading his chapter in The Falsification of Science on the subjects just mentioned. John, over to you.
Rob, it's called Germ Theory, A Totally False Paradigm. Okay, and basically what it's about is the fact that it's like an alternative view of what's going on, in effect, and it kind of puts a whole different perspective on everything, the way that viruses are transmitted, the way that vaccines work or not, as the case may be. But anyway, I won't totally preempt it. I'll get on with the reading and we'll take it from there. Okay, I'm going to start with three specific quotes from various different people. And the first one is, "Doctors are men who prescribe medicines of which they know little, to cure diseases of which they know less, in human beings of whom they know nothing." And that was by Voltaire, the French philosopher. The second one is, "We need to redirect our perspectives of microbes and see them in a new light. In terms of bacteria, for example, we need to appreciate them as bodily inhabitants who assist us in such ways as protecting us from other organisms, e.g. fungi, assisting in digestion and the metabolism of food, synthesizing vitamins and helping to eliminate waste materials," Dr. Paul Goldberg. Thirdly, "Hygienists object to the germ theory of disease because germs do not cause disease. They may be present in disease processes, and they may complicate a disease with their waste products, which can be very toxic at times, but the germ or virus alone is never the sole cause of disease," Dr. Virginia Vetrano. My thanks once again go to Shannon Rowan for her hugely significant contributions to this chapter. In the medical schools of all Western countries today, doctors are taught an utterly monstrous lie, a lie which is actually the basis of all modern medicine and which thus renders its entire premise totally false. This lie is commonly known as germ theory, and the scientist credited with postulating it was Louis Pasteur, also credited with finding a cure for rabies, although it probably does not exist as such and is simply another made-up disease. More of this later. Once again, it is important to point out that the clue to the deception here is in the description of this particular sleight of hand. So-called germ theory is exactly that, yet another insubstantial theory that has somehow mutated into a kind of concrete fact, accepted without question by the whole of the medical and pharmaceutical industries, and its many detractors are ruthlessly vilified and ridiculed by the protective medical mafia. Germ theory does not account for or explain many diseases such as cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and several degenerative and chronic conditions. Therefore, there is clearly a gap in the conventional wisdom of how our bodies work and why we become ill. Incidentally, is it not also significant that those who oppose the germ theory are now branded as germ theory deniers by the medical establishment and the wholly corrupted mainstream media?
This is standard practice in line with those who argue against the validity of the Holocaust and vaccines, to name but two examples. The wholesale usage of these labels is intended to emphasise the validity of the conventional views, while subtly denigrating those who seek only to propound the truth, often against insurmountable odds. Pasteur has been feted by the medical profession for making some of the most important discoveries of all time. Yet when the historical evidence is examined, it leads inescapably to the conclusion that Pasteur was merely an incompetent fraud. Not only did he not understand the processes with which he experimented and wrote about, but most of what he is credited with discovering was plagiarised from several other scientists, as detailed in the 1940s book Pasteur, Plagiarist, Imposter by R.B. Pearson. Both Pasteur and a contemporary of his, Antoine Beauchamp, were experimenting with the process of fermentation. The prevailing theory was that fermentation was a simple chemical reaction, but Beauchamp's experiments clearly demonstrated that fermentation was a process brought about by microorganisms in the air. However, Pasteur continued to insist for some time after Beauchamp's discovery that fermentation was a process that did not require oxygen because it was a lifeless chemical reaction, known as spontaneous generation. It actually took Pasteur many years to finally grasp the concept that the fermentation of sugars is caused by a yeast fungus, a living organism. And when he finally did comprehend and write about these concepts, he presented them as his own discoveries, giving no credit at all to Beauchamp. So at the very least, he was definitely a plagiarist. Throughout their careers, Pasteur and Beauchamp individually continued to experiment with microorganisms. Pasteur continued to adhere rigidly to the principle of monomorphism, the belief that all microbes and bacteria have only one form, whereas Beauchamp was able to prove, however, the existence of pleomorphism, the crucial fact that microbes can alter their form to appear as different entities. This discovery was eventually confirmed by many scientists that succeeded Beauchamp, including Gunther Enderlein. In his experiments, Enderlein discovered that every living cell contains two distinct kinds of microorganisms known as endobionts, which means inside life. These microorganisms exist within the cell, cannot be removed from it, and play an important role in cellular health. The state of a person's health is determined by the stage of development of these organisms, and Enderlein further discovered that all microbes that live permanently in our bodies go through three stages. The primitive stage, microbe, the middle stage, bacteria, and the end stage, fungus. Subsequently, other scientists were later able to confirm that there was actually a fourth stage, which occurs only after extreme toxicity, and in which the fungus goes through a transformation, mutating into what we know as a virus. So most of the diseases in modern society today are not caused by the alleged pathogenic bacteria that enter our bodies from outsiders, as was emphatically suggested by Pasteur. And in fact, disease occurs as these endobionts are transformed from the microbe stage to more virulent forms of life, and the state of development of these organisms depends upon the state of the medium in which the organism lives. In other words, the microbes which live in our cells and assist the cells in maintaining a healthy state will mutate into bacteria, fungus, and viruses when the tissues of our bodies in which they live change to provide a medium for their growth. They gradually become better able to survive harsh conditions, but it is these conditions which actually cause the problem. The entire process may be summarized thus. Primitive phases live in a strong alkaline pH environment. Bacterial phases live in mild alkaline pH environment. Fungal forms live in a medium acid pH environment. Viral forms live in a strong acid pH environment. These primitive organisms can live in our bodies in the microbe stage indefinitely and do not cause disease, but rather perform a restorative function. Bacteria and other germs consume dead tissue. That is their function. Experiments have demonstrated that were we to place a fresh, raw steak that still has active live enzymes in it and a cooked steak outside in the open air, it is the cooked steak only that will become infested with maggots. Microorganisms cannot survive in living tissue. It is only when the tissue becomes dead that they move in to do their job. This is exactly what happens in a garden compost pile. The waste food and vegetable matter, along with bacteria, is placed there, and the bacteria decompose the food remnants into soil. Everything that exists on this earth eventually biodegrades back to its original basic chemical composition. Incidentally, this process also takes place on a much wider non-biological scale and is what is known as entropy, the phenomenon by which all matter eventually breaks down over time and returns to its original chemical constituents. For example, the process of iron turning firstly to rust and then iron oxide powder, and the general wear and tear and breakdown experienced by all things. Most of the germs which enter our bodies from the outside, we are told, are quickly dealt with by the immune system. But in reality, sickness is nothing to do with microorganisms invading our bodies. The microbes already exist within us. And now here comes a quote by a gentleman by the name of James McComiskey, who is an absolute expert on this topic. The medical myth of the immune system came about in the early 1970s to explain why some people are susceptible to disease, cancer, whereas others are not. The immune system has been presented to us as a type of army in our body whose job is to eventually destroy the malignant cancer cells and malignant germs. There is no such thing as a malignant cancer cell. They exist when one is suffering from cancer. They do not cause cancer. Cancer is caused by a biological shock. There is also no such thing as malignant germs. They are active in the reparation phase of all disease. The medical myth of an immune system is another dogma invented by modern medicine to explain why the germ theory of disease dogma does not work. James McComiskey, The Ultimate Conspiracy, The Biomedical Paradigm. So, in reality, whether or not we get sick and die has very little to do with so-called catching diseases, but has everything to do with whether or not we keep our bodies free of the dead matter upon which these microorganisms feed. And here is another quote from my friend and co-author on my next project, Shannon Rowan, who is an alternative healthcare expert. She's also a geopolitical researcher and author, as I am. There are many microorganisms that must be permanently present in order for us to live. For example, E. coli is actually needed in our guts, but an overabundance of it can be created by any form of toxicity, and bacteria are produced to deal with the problem. It is the overabundance of toxins which actually cause the problem. This then is the real cause of illness. Simply put, if we were to completely sterilise our bodies, we would die. It is the same too with the environment in which we live. It is all a question of balance. So the more the merrier when it comes to microorganisms in terms of variety. A variety will keep things nicely in check, so any particular one does not overly flourish and cause a problem. Take this garden analogy, for example. If there is a sufficient variety of insect and plant life, then one insect cannot take over and destroy everything. Some plants may well be eaten, but not the majority, so life will continue. This is how our bodies and our guts should be viewed, as an ecosystem that thrives better on diversity. But it is also true that the stronger and healthier plants will more easily survive bug infestations, and what makes them stronger and healthier is all dependent on nutrients in the soil and enough, but not too much, water and sunlight. And toxic exposures in whatever form will also sicken, weaken and destroy them readily. This is me again now to continue. As with that other great deceiver of the 19th century, Charles Darwin, at the end of his life, Pasteur ultimately admitted that his theory was a total fraud. He confessed that it was not the germs that were the issue, but the medium in which they lived, and yet his false, so-called theory is now the basis of the whole medical model of disease and healing. Pasteur finally realised that germ theory was flawed, and so he abruptly reversed his position, acknowledging that germs were not the primary cause of disease. But it was Koch's postulates that proved to be the ultimate proof of this premise, providing a clear basis for the scientific testing of the theory, which by the way is known as the terrain theory. The German scientist Robert Koch, a bacteriologist, physiologist, and one of Pasteur's contemporaries, specified the correct testing procedure, which to this day is still considered a valid endorsement of the true scientific method. Koch proposed four postulates to prove whether or not a bacterium is pathogenic, and thereby the cause of a specific disease. 1. The pathogenic microbe can be observed in the body fluids of a host suffering from the disease. This pathogenic organism is not present in a healthy host. 2. The pathogenic microbe can be isolated from the diseased host and cultured in the laboratory. 3. The cultured pathogenic microbe causes the same disease when introduced into another host. 4. The microbe can be re-isolated from that experimentally infected host. Viruses, on the other hand, do not actually exist, as it is not possible to isolate them. And furthermore, according to current scientific standards, one must, in order to prove existence of a virus, isolate it and photograph and biochemically characterize it. Bacteria do exist and can live outside the body, whereas no virus has ever been proved to exist, let alone live outside the body. What we refer to as a virus is simply an RNA sequence observed under electron microscopes, and even then it is not readily identifiable, as is often seen in various cases of people supposedly carrying the same virus in their cells. This is instead a byproduct of the cells themselves and is actually cell debris, which cannot be broken down. Highly significantly, a Freedom of Information request to the British government in November 2020, inquiring as to whether the COVID-19 virus had ever been isolated, was responded to with an emphatic no, thus proving beyond a shadow of doubt that the COVID-19 virus does not in fact even exist. And here we have another quote from James McAmiskey. In relation to bacteria, you can isolate and culture them, the first two of Koch's postulates. However, you cannot inject, say, tubercular bacteria or cholera bacilli into somebody and cause tuberculosis or cholera. The germ theory of disease does not work for viruses because they do not exist. It also does not work for bacteria because you cannot cause the same disease by injecting the bacteria that allegedly caused that disease in another person. James McAmiskey. Now back to me again. Because not all four of Koch's postulates are met when describing disease pathology, namely numbers 3 and 4, as neither has ever been demonstrated for any so-called infectious disease to date, bacteria and viruses can be said with absolute certainty to not be the direct cause of disease. There are so many fraudulent photographs allegedly of viruses in existence, but there are two ways to detect the fraud: by reading the caption for the photo and by examining the photo. The caption usually states that the photos show the cell which supposedly contained the virus. The captions do not even claim to have isolated the virus, yet they are being fraudulently and criminally misrepresented to the general public as being direct pictures of viruses. These photographs show cells, and contained in the cells are typically cellular substances of all types. These structures are well known and serve functions such as transport inside and outside the cells. These are fraudulently claimed to be viruses by scientists. All viruses of a particular type always have the same size and shape. If the pictures show a particular type of virus, but with the virus particles having different shapes, then you immediately know that they are fraudulent. And that was a quote from James McAmiskey again, from his book, The Ultimate Conspiracy, The Biomedical Paradigm. The scientific method of confirming that a specific bacterium is the cause of a disease means satisfying all four postulates, not just 1, 2, or 3. Scientists know that specific bacteria are not found in every case of a specific disease. The eminent Canadian physician, Sir William Osier, found that the diphtheria bacillus is absent in 28-40% of cases of diphtheria. Green's medical diagnosis says that tubercle bacilli may be present early, more often late, or in rare instances be absent throughout the disease condition. And indeed, the first postulate is not fulfilled in tuberculosis, diphtheria, typhoid fever, pneumonia, or any other disease, in fact. and nor is the first postulate fulfilled, because it is a medically accepted fact that so-called pathogenic bacteria are found in the bodies of humans and animals which exhibit no symptoms of any disease whatsoever. Also, specific bacteria are repeatedly found when the disease they are alleged to cause is totally absent. The third postulate is not fulfilled either. Neither Pasteur nor any of his contemporaries or successors have ever induced disease by the ingestion of airborne bacteria. Contagion has never been proved by airborne means, and the poisons or proteins may only cause sickness if injected, and even then not in every instance. Koch's third postulate originally specified that introducing germ cultures in a healthy body or organism will always produce signs and symptoms of the disease. This again is not so, and thus in order to protect germ theory it was revised to introducing germ cultures in a susceptible body or organism produces signs and symptoms of the disease. But again, although germs are present in illness, that is no evidence that they have caused the disease. The condition of the host is of primary importance in the production of illness. And here we have another quote from James McComiskey from his book The Ultimate Conspiracy, The Biomedical Paradigm. The 74-year-old German hygienist Max von Pettenkofer wanted to prove his theories on the true causes of cholera. He got a cholera culture from the Koch Institute without revealing his true intention. On the 7th of October 1892, he drank a milliliter of these cholera bacilli. He didn't get sick, nor did he get cholera. His assistant repeated the same experiment on the 17th of October 1892. He got slightly sick but recovered rapidly, but he did not get cholera. The Biochemical Society of Toronto, Canada, carried out similar experiments in which pure cultures of typhoid, diphtheria, pneumonia, tuberculosis and meningitis were consumed in large quantities by a group of volunteers. No ill effects were observed. Back to me again. Disease is a process of physiological and biochemical changes within the body, producing certain signs and symptoms which we label incorrectly as specific diseases. Diseases are categorized as communicable or infectious, but it is not true that any disease per se is transmitted from one person to another. Disease has many different causes. Most frequently it is due to the inadvertent introduction of toxins into the body by various methods. Eating GMO chemical-laden, highly processed foods, drinking aspartame-poisoned or heavily sugared soft drinks, overindulgence in alcohol, becoming intoxicated, taking harmful drugs, especially chemical pharmaceutical medicines, being injected with heavy metal-containing vaccines, breathing carcinogenic polluted air, and being exposed to excessive amounts of electromagnetic radiation, as well as not getting adequate sleep, rest, or exercise, all contribute to toxic overload in our bodies. The fundamental causes of disease can also be described as the result of enervation. Enervation is body depletion and or exhaustion due to the diminution of nervous energy when the body has expanded more than it is capable of regenerating in a timely fashion. The general energy level diminishes, extreme tiredness and functional efficiency then ensues, and we develop a state known as toxicosis, as the body becomes saturated with toxic matter. Toxicosis often manifests as a disturbance of the blood and tissue fluids and the accumulation of toxic byproducts of the metabolic processes. In recent years, studies of biochemical pathology have revealed this disturbance within the homeostatic mechanism of the body caused by the accumulation of toxic substances. We have another quote here. The Biochemical Society of Toronto conducted a number of very interesting experiments in which pure cultures of typhoid, diphtheria, pneumonia, tuberculosis and meningitis germs were consumed by the millions in food and drink by a group of volunteers. The results proved that no ill effects whatsoever were experienced by a single one of the volunteers. That was from the Germ Theory Reexamined by Bob Zuror and Bob Lewansky in Vegetarian World in September 1977. The diagnoses and treatments in the form of big pharma drugs provided by today's doctors inevitably make the patient sicker by simply poisoning our systems. All the preceding information here is based upon sound scientific studies and documents, yet anyone who chooses to deny the effectiveness of or refuse allopathic medical treatment is regarded as being somehow mentally unstable or in dire need of psychiatric help. And should parents refuse to allow their child to be given these modern medical so-called cures, they are looked upon as guilty of gross negligence at best and child abuse at worst, and risk having their children removed from them, simply for not agreeing with an incorrect interpretation of scientific data. But perhaps the most stunning and revelatory aspect of the entire germ theory paradigm is that without it, an entire corrupt, fraudulent industry would almost cease to exist. The modern Rockefeller allopathic petroleum-based drug industry is based almost entirely upon the curing of diseases allegedly caused by bacteria and viruses. Take away the invalid theory of their cause and what is left? Ailments that can be treated extremely simply and without great expense to the patient, but of course that in no way benefits the giant mega-rich drug cartels or indeed the current medical paradigm. To me, this speaks volumes as to the reason why germ theory is so popular amongst conventional medical practitioners, and especially, of course, the drug industry. Their entire livelihoods and a huge monolithic industry are almost entirely dependent upon it. Another quote here from Dr. T.C. Fry. Actually, bacteria are our symbiotic partners in both health and disease. They serve a useful role. As scavengers, they make harmless or remove undesirable substances within our bodies. They also elaborate certain of our body needs. That is, they help build complex organic compounds from simple ingredients. A notable example of this is the production of vitamin B12 in our intestines. Fry also wrote, "Infection is no war in which the body is fighting invaders. The bacteria that come to these sites are symbiotic and help the body in elaborating dead cells and tissues for expulsion. They are partners in the cleanup process. When this has been accumulated, the bacteria disappear and the wound heals. Infection is a body cleaning process for a body burdened with toxic materials." And now this is me again. So please, for the sake of your health and that of all your family, choose to reject the current false medical paradigm, and in doing so you will avoid all of the so-called plagues of the 20th and 21st centuries, including but not exclusively cancer, AIDS, SARS, Ebola, swine flu, bird flu, COVID-19, and indeed any other future engineered pandemics. Bearing in mind the above facts, it also immediately renders the entire concept of vaccines as a preventative for disease as being totally irrelevant, superfluous, and most importantly, fraudulent. And given that simple fact, how can vaccines possibly be claimed to be, as they most certainly are, the saviours of mankind due to the eradication of so many diseases? Indeed, the whole premise is shown up to be exactly what it is, utter fraud and deception, designed to extract trillions of dollars per annum from governments and the world population in general.
Well, thank you, my friend, and I feel it a great honour to be able to present this to those who have ears to listen to it. Thanks once more, John.